Welcome back to another Better Call Sexton. I'm your host, James Sexton. Before we begin, remember to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, all those wonderful things. Today, we have got a packed docket for you. I've got a THC horror story that is all too clear in my mind right now. We talk a little bit about Chud the Builder and the chaos he's going through. We use it as an opportunity to talk about free speech, bail, all those other exciting things. Today's episode brought to you by TrustedPrenup.com. That's right, democratizing prenuptial agreements for the entire United States. Check out TrustedPrenup.com. We got lots and lots to talk about today, so remember to stick around and let's get after it.
All right, Jim, back in the saddle.
Hoo-ah.
Today we are going to cover the Chud the Builder scandal, which
knew that was coming.
I'll explain to the audience if you're not familiar with who he is, because while he's not very popular, he is at the center of a lot of controversy right now. And I think this is one of those topics where James Sexton is the only one to talk us through this madness.
Intersection of influencers and law. It's just right my perfect little spot of heaven.
Are you up to it?
Let's do it.
Because I was under the impression you're maybe dragging a little bit on a little...
I'm going to tell you the truth. Oh, you called me out on it.
I'm just saying. I was told you're not operating at 100%.
I am not at 100%. Uh-huh. I'm not at 100%. I'll tell you a funny story, actually. I learned a lesson about THC edibles last night.
You're never too old to learn a lesson about THC.
You are not. I have to tell you, I've never really been a big, you know, edibles guy. I'm not really a huge weed person, but, you know, I had a trial today. So I was like, okay, I'm going to help get some sleep. And instead, I tell you something, and this is not a marketing thing. I should have stuck with my soul gummies.
Never stray from soul.
I'm never straying from soul again. This is not an advertisement. I'm telling you, I'm never straying from soul again, because I got some other gummies, not soul, from a dispensary, licensed dispensary, you know, right near my apartment. And it was a brand I've had before and haven't had any issues with. It was a dosage that should not have been a problem. I don't know what was actually in there. I don't know what the dosage actually was. Oh, it was a rough ride. It was. I got in last night, long, busy day at work. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have one of these. It'll help me mellow out. I'm going to watch. You know, I'm getting close to the season finale or the series finale of The Boys. I'm still a few episodes behind. Too, yeah. I'm like, let me get on this. I was like, you know, I'm going to do it. So I sat down, had a little food, and I was like, oh, you know, let me take a gummy now. It takes like half an hour, 45 minutes for them to kick in, and then I'll go to sleep and it'll be great. Oh, did it go horribly wrong? It really was like one of those, oh God, this is permanent. What if it's permanent? Like, what if I forget how to breathe? Like, how will I remember? You know, like, it was one of those. And so I just don't have those. Again, because I usually stick with salt. Mm-hmm. When I stick with salt, I control the dosage. I know exactly how many to take, and it's consistent every time. I don't know if this brand, I just got a bad one, or I got one that was way higher dosage than it said it was. They were supposed to be 10s, which is big for me, but it'll knock me on my keister. But man, I took it, and about 45 minutes in, I was like, oh, I'm feeling really high. I'm going to go lay down. I'll go to sleep. I laid down and instantly my thoughts were racing. I felt like I'd taken like DMT. It was like tripping. And I just was like, okay, I'm way overstimulated in the dark with my eyes closed. I have to just, so I take out my phone and I'm watching like silly videos on YouTube. And I'm like, okay, this will calm me down. But meanwhile, my thoughts just kept like racing and running to other crazy things. And then whatever the worst thing I could think of was, I'm like, well, don't think about dead, you know, and then I'm like, why am I thinking about not thinking about that? Because now I'm thinking about that. And I really went like every classic trope of like, I got too high. Like every classic trope that, am I going to forget how to breathe? Is this permanent? What if I go crazy? I feel like I'm tripping. Is the world made of fractals? Like, it was just the absolute worst. And I just kept watching a few things. Then I thought I'd calm down. I'd close my eyes and then nope. Okay. Still too intense, you know? And I was like, oh my God. So then I'm Googling. How long do edibles last, you know? And it's like 8 to 12 hours. I'm like, oh, no. So I managed to go to sleep at some point, maybe an hour or two later, which for me, this was so late at night.
Yeah.
I wake up this morning at 4:30, which is about a half an hour later than I usually do, I was still fucking high.
The worst.
And I was like, I have a trial. Yeah. I have a trial in like 4 hours. So I was like, okay, I can't work out because I'm still pretty high. And I'm like, I don't want to, like, I don't know what to do. I should eat some breakfast. I should hydrate. So I literally was just white knuckling it. Like, and I'm like, they, like, and I felt like a teenager again. Like, I'm going to walk into the office and they're going to be like, they know. They definitely know. And I walked in and I'm like, just really quiet. And I'm just feeling awful. Like, it was not fun at all. And thank God, after like a couple hours, around 8:30 a.m., I started to feel human again, but just exhausted. So yes, I'm not firing on all cylinders right now. I learned a very important lesson. Even if you're buying them from a dispensary, even if they're sealed, just stick with a reliable brand.
Soul gummies. You've had
good for me, that's Soul, because I can pick the exact dosage and I've never had a problem. Years of enjoying out of office gummies and I've yet to have a problem. But man, I don't know. I got cocky and I was like, let me try something different. Nope. Not going to do that ever again. That was not fun.
Soul Gummies, promo code Sexton, 30% off.
So I think that is that. Promo code Sexton. Sex is the way to go on that one. And let me tell you something. And I guess I got spoiled because I've only had good experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a big edibles person, but I love the Soul Gummies. And I guess I just got cocky. I was trying to be a big man. It did not work out. It was bad. So let me be a lesson cautionary learned. Tale for you crazy kids. Stick with what you know.
Well, speaking of things going horribly wrong, that is Chud the Builder. So
Chud the Builder might want to have a lot of,
he needs
right
as much
now.
As he
yeah,
can
he
get
needs to get as much THC in him as possible.
He's truly like everything wrong with humanity when you break it down. He's a lonely person who realized that like outrage on the internet gets more attention than humanity.
Yes.
And it's vengeance and anger and racism and loneliness and greed and ego all wrapped into one.
All of it.
So if you're not familiar with him, he is one of these online streamers who goes out in the real world walking the streets.
He's an IRL streamer.
They're calling them nuisance streamers now because they just go out there to really cause a problem.
A couple of very popular IRL streamers.
Okay, so you got a little...
I have a little insight. These guys make money.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing it right on Kick or Twitch or one of those other ones... Wow, do these guys make money. If they have big branding deals with some of the online gambling things and you get a lot, there's merch and things people say, it's really, and the super chats and things that people pay for. It is shocking, the stream of, it's like the first time I did a very successful OF models custody case with the inevitable loser boyfriend they have a kid with. I was shocked at the stream of revenue.
And so this guy, he's Chud the Builder because he used to do construction work and contracting, and he lost that job after saying racist stuff on the internet.
What? You know, someone said racist stuff on the internet?
Hardcore N-bombs and really provoking mostly black people. So he lost that job, and then once that happened, he really got racist because he views them as the cause for all of his problems in this world.
Just the blacks.
Yeah, pretty much. Just that's the whole thing got is it. What he has
got
a problem
it.
With.
Okay. It's and all about the melanin for him.
So while
I always felt racism is one of those things. It's like there's so much to hate about humans. Race feels so arbitrary. You know what I mean? Like there's so much to dislike. Like, why would you pick that? That's such an odd thing to pick, you know? Like, there's so many things to dislike about almost anyone if you get to know them.
I mean, this guy's way worse than any other racial implication is the way this guy's behaving. Yeah. So he was actually, he ran out on a bill at a restaurant, $400 bill.
Wine and dash.
And that was what initially got him in some legal trouble.
Got it.
And then while outside the courthouse in Tennessee, a black guy approached him. They ended up having words. It becomes physical, and he pulls out a gun to shoot at him, ends up somehow shooting himself in the arm. So,
I mean, you know,
magic bullet style, I don't know. And now
What is his draw technique?
I think it was his left side of his arm, and I'm assuming he's shooting with his right hand.
Okay.
So all truly right. Some magic bullet going on, and now he is in prison with a $1.25 million bail bond situation, which we'll get into. There's a fundraiser going on to raise money for him. But yeah, he faces like up to 60 years in prison for attempted murder, all because of a nuisance stream gone wrong.
Yeah.
So, different ways to go here.
The mustache was his first mistake.
The whole thing is like a Halloween costume.
Yeah, it's bad.
Cowboy
hat,
mustache.
He could, with just a slight adjustment to his look, he could be on Summer House. You know what I mean? But instead, he's going racist IRL streamer.
Interesting choice.
Clearly has poor gun handling skills. Yeah. I mean, listen, this is rough stuff. I mean, first of all, any sentence that starts off with there was a scuffle outside the Tennessee courthouse, that's going to be bad. Like, it's not going to go well. You know what I mean? Bad things have happened outside of Tennessee courthouses. That's just not a great place for it. But yeah, I mean, look, I think one of the things that this brought into the public focus, which has been the subject of some discourse in a lot of jurisdictions, is bail, you know, and how bail works. Bail is not one of those things. Like, people know Dog the Bounty Hunter. People know a little bit about, like, they've heard the term bail, or there was no bail, or he was a bail jumper. And I've got a lot of questions from people. We got a lot of, you know, emails and things from people wanting to talk about this case. And a lot of what people were asking about is, like, what is bail, or how does a bail bond work? Because the video you see of this guy when he got told he had $1.2 million bail was, he looked like somebody punched him.
Yeah.
And it must have been that someone explained to him in advance of that bail hearing that, you know, because really what you're shooting for when you have a bail hearing is ROR, which is released on your own recognizance, which basically means there's no bail. You have ties to the community. You're going to come back. You're not a flight risk. They're not going to have to issue a bench warrant for you. Bail is something a court sets if they're concerned you're not going to show up. If they're concerned you're going to try to flee the country, flee the jurisdiction of the court, that you're not going to show up, that you have a history of not showing up, or that the charges are so severe that it would make sense for you to be a flight risk, or that you're somebody who has, you know, ties outside the United States, that you might be able to go someplace where we don't have extradition treaties. So that's what bail is for. And very often, the amount that's set for bail is intentionally so high that you would have to do things like mortgage your home as security, and you would have to do. But then it really turned into an entire industry where was called bail bonds were created. And the bond is basically just an insurance policy. Like, you're the person who sells you a bail bond is essentially saying, I insure that this person's going to show up. So they give the court the $1.2 million, and they charge you usually 10% of the bond amount. So it would be, for $1.2 million, it would probably be $120,000 that you have to give to the bail bondsman, plus security, like a mortgage against your house, jewelry, whatever you have asset-wise that they can hold on to. So if you jump bail or flee bail, meaning you don't show up for the court hearing and a bench warrant is issued, they don't have to hire a bounty hunter, which is a person who has to find you so that they don't lose their $1.2 million insurance, essentially, that they took against you showing up for court. But, you know, they keep the bond amount. So they usually keep the $120,000 as their fee. So this is like out of your pocket. You're never going to get that money back again. And 1.2 mil is a big, big number. But again, the higher the stakes of the litigation and the more clear cut the case against you is, the more that a judge is probably going to assign you a pretty high bail number. But, you know, it's always like this guy, you know, they went in and basically argued for ROR and say, look, this guy doesn't need bail. He's not a flight risk. And 1.2 is a big, big number. So he looked like somebody killed his puppy. Yep. And that's unfortunate.
So in order to try to combat this, the Chud the Builder Army, which is just sickening that that even exists,
yeah,
started a Give, Send, Go, which is a fundraiser.
Uh-huh.
Now, prosecutors are trying to block those funds from being used by saying that anonymous mass donations might be bypassing the financial accountability laws.
Yeah.
And it's you know, they're trying to stop that. Is
There are some rules about who's allowed to pay your bail or pay your bond. And it's just like political contributions. Like, there are reporting requirements for the state so that people aren't. And again, those are actually designed to protect people from predatory lending. So, you know, if like a lot of people that commit crimes don't have a lot of money, but they're very desperate to get a loved one out of jail. You know, if someone's like the sole breadwinner for a family and they're in jail for something, you know, and they, again, this is a person who's innocent until proven guilty. So even though they've been accused of a crime, you know, we have this presumption of innocence. So if someone's the breadwinner for a family or a parent to young children and they've been accused of a crime and they're being held and they, you know, the judge sets a very high bail, and these aren't people that, you know, have, you know, significant assets that they can post for security to get a bail bond. You know, there were people out there that did predatory lending that would say, you know, yeah, I'll loan you this money, but it's going to be, you know, 10% interest accruing weekly, you know, and just like typical like loan shark type behavior, which under the threat of violence, you know, loan sharking is a tremendous, predatory lending is a tremendous business. You know, you look at those check cashing places, you look at some of the bail bonds places are another example of that, payday loans, you know, structured settlement payments. Like these are all ways to sort of take advantage of people that are already in very precarious financial situations, Klarna and things like that, all these buy now, you know, pay later things. Again, not illegal, but they're predatory over the fact that people can't afford certain things that they want or need. And it really creates for some. So there has to be some reporting requirements for those things, or else they can become a form of usury or loan sharking. I am so excited to talk about Proper Cloth. I have to tell you, I have been wearing Proper Cloth shirts exclusively for over a decade now. Absolutely my favorite shirts on the market, customized in every possible way. I like to show a little extra cuff on this because I like my French cuffs and my cufflinks. I like to have a little watch allowance on here. Proper Cloth gives you the ability to have a shirt that is perfectly customized. You're not going to break the bank. There is nothing better out there than Proper Cloth. Check out propercloth.com. Use offer code Sexton, S-E-X-T-O-N, for 10% off your first order at propercloth.com.
Now, a lot of his fans are almost calling for the judge who set the bail to be fired or lose, you know, disbarred, however you say. What's your opinion of the $1.2 million? Does that jump out at you?
You know, I mean, look, it's a very serious charge, you know, attempted murder.
There was three things I said. The serious charges,
yeah.
It happened in a public place outside of a courthouse.
Yep.
And the reason you were outside of a courthouse is because you already have a bond from a...
Correct.
So it's
so you're a repeat offender. So if you have a repeat offender, you have multiple charges pending against you. Look, what it really is a nexus of risk. Like, what's the risk of you fleeing? You know, and anytime we always set different standards for violent crimes, right? And we should. I mean, most people, if it's a nonviolent offender, if someone's guilty of embezzlement or guilty of, you know, some white collar crime, you're not going to be as worried about that person being out on the streets. But if someone has, you know, is accused of in multiple instances violent crimes, you don't really want that person out on the street. Unless, you know, again, we have the presumption of innocence, unless there's some real security against it. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't think, you know, the way that judges get in trouble is people, you know, report them to the State Commission on Judicial Conduct. I mean, you know, judges have a certain level of immunity because they always have to make difficult decisions. That's the nature of the job. And there's always going to be someone who dislikes, it's an adversarial system. So there's always going to be somebody who dislikes what the judge has to say. Is this an insane high number for the severity of the crime? I don't think so. But there are a lot of people that are very critical of how bail works in the United States and the sub economy that is sort of developed around it. And so that is, you know, this is part of that larger cultural conversation. But I don't know that this is an example of someone that we would be like taking up arms for to try to help, because this is a person who, you know, committed a very serious violent crime in a public setting while he had prior charges against him and now faces very serious jail time and a pretty slim likelihood of success. Now, again, will he go to trial? Probably not. Will it get pled down? Probably. They charge him with attempted murder. They'll probably charge him with, you know, discharge of a firearm in a public setting or reckless endangerment or something like that, which again is a serious crime. It's a felony, but it's not as high level of a felony as an attempted murder. You know, reckless endangerment, things like that. That's a failure to perceive negligence, a failure to perceive. Recklessness is a conscious disregard for substantial and unjustifiable risk of serious harm. So it's the difference between like not realizing what you did and realizing what you did was really, really stupid and you consciously disregarded the risk to other people that this created. But again, like it's going to depend on the prosecutor and how hard they want to go in the paint on this thing. The more publicity, what I would say is, the more publicity that's on this case, the worse it is for Chud the Builder. Because
they want to make an example.
He is a, yeah, I mean, it's like the prosecutors are going to want to make a case of this and make an example of it. And this is the kind of thing that happened. I mean, you know, the stuff that happened to Anatoly, you know, in wherever it was, Thailand or the Philippines, that was largely a function of the fact that he had a media presence and they were watching and they said, okay, we got to make an example of this guy. So that you don't want to be a person who's like, hey, we're going to put an end to, you know, this inappropriate IRL streaming, this nuisance streaming. We're going to tell people they can't do it anymore. We're going to make an example. You do not want to be made an example of in the legal system. It is especially the criminal legal system.
But my God, as an outsider, I hope it is. I mean, I feel, how did we get here as a society? Because I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. But the fact that this guy will scream slurs in people's faces, and there is an army of people defending him and supporting him. It's like, boy, this is bad even by modern standards.
Yeah, I mean, look, I thought like Jack Daugherty and people like that were sort of sneako, were like kind of as bad as it could get. But the truth is, like, no, there's always, the bar can always go lower, you know? And I think, you know, this kind of rage bait stuff, it's the algorithm doesn't know. Like, it doesn't, all it knows is engagement. So if you comment that you love me or if you comment that you hate me, it's just engagement. That's all the algorithm knows is, hey, this is making people feel something. I mean, in one way, it kind of fits the definition of art, you know, because art is intended to make you feel something, whether it makes you happy, whether it makes you sad, whether it makes you nostalgic. It's supposed to evoke feeling in you. So, you know, the algorithm is trying to do the same thing. It's try to, you know, keep your attention, colonize your attention and evoke some response, whether positive or negative. These guys have all figured out we are much more passionate about the things we hate than we are the things we love, you know? And, you know, I think Schopenhauer might have said that all politics is the systematic organization of human hatred. That's really all it is. Like, all this is just sort of figuring out a way to systematically weaponize hatred. And again, a lot of people have figured out, like, be annoying as possible on the internet. Be as ignorant, aggressively ignorant as possible on the internet. And people will engage with you just to tell you you're an idiot or to say, oh, he's being a troll and you don't get the joke and I do. And we're, you know, but that, listen, you can't go wrong with that stuff. It does quite well. I think eventually we're going to start as a culture getting really tired of this. I think things just get tired eventually. That's what's kind of great about cool is cool kills itself. Yeah. So like the thing that was cool, once everyone thinks it's cool, it's just not cool anymore. So I think that this is going to have its moment and then it's going to pass.
And the last thing, it's driving me crazy how much this is getting conflated with freedom of speech. Like, no one's impeding your speech. You're saying it. You're doing it.
There are freedom of speech issues implicated in this. And I think it's ignorant to say that there aren't. One of the things I think we don't recognize as a culture, because we're coming out of this like era of the woke stuff, is that you don't get to hit people because you don't like what they say. Like, if someone uses the N-word with a hard R, you don't legally get to punch them in the face. I know that people go, oh, we should punch Nazis. We should punch racists. We should be able to hit people. If someone says something like, this is not grade school. If someone says something bad about your mom, it doesn't mean you're allowed to hit the person. It doesn't work that way. Like, I like that. I like living in a society where there are laws. I like the rule of law. So do I think that people should walk around hurling racial epithets and saying sexist or homophobic or horrible things to each other? No, absolutely. I don't think people should. Do I think they have the right to? Absolutely have the right to. You absolutely have a right to say horrible, terrible things. Do I think you should not call a person by their preferred pronouns? I think you're a dick if you don't call someone by their preferred pronouns. But you know what? Do I think people have the right to call people whatever pronouns they want to and be hateful? Yes, you have a right to. I believe in free speech. I believe we have the right to do that. I will defend to my death the right for someone to say something that I would spend my life fighting against. Like, that's what it's for. If you, free speech is not defending people's right to agree with you. Like, free speech is about defending people's right to say things that make your blood boil, but they have a right to say them without the threat of violence. So I do actually think there are free speech implications in this situation. But yeah, I mean, is that what this discourse should be about? He's not, you know, being convicted for his speech. He's being convicted, like, state action, state impediment implicates the First Amendment, you know, which is that it doesn't protect against private action. It protects against government action to impinge your free speech.
And last thing from the family law angle, his baby mother is either requesting or demanding that they change the last name of their son so that he is not connected to Chud the Builder. Is that
last name's not going to be the Builder?
The Builder.
Yeah.
Mr. Like the Builder.
Bobby the Builder. Yeah.
Is that something you can ask for and hope for?
Or can you compel all you want. Someone? You can ask for a unicorn if you want to. Are you legally entitled to it? No. No, you're probably not legally entitled to it. So the naming of a child is actually a very tricky thing. A child's surname is a very tricky thing. I've had clients who, you know, had an unexpected pregnancy with a woman, and they said, you know, look, I, and the woman says, oh, I'm naming the kid X, Y, and Z and not giving him your surname, or I am giving him your surname. And I have clients who are like, she could prohibit her from using my last name. You know, I don't want to acknowledge, like, I'll pay child support or whatever, but this is not my child. I have a wife or I have whatever, you know. And you're allowed to change your name to anything you want to, as long as it is not for the purposes of evading legitimate creditors. Like, you're allowed to change your name. Like, if you're dating someone and you're like, I'm going to change my last name to the same as yours, they can't stop you from doing that. You can't force someone to give up your last name when you get divorced if they change their name. Like, people, I can change my name to Angelina Jolie tomorrow if I want to legally. I don't know why I picked her. I'm not meaning to pick on Angelina Jolie. But I can change my name to anything I want to, as long as it's not for the purpose of evading creditors. A child's name, that's a decision a custodial parent gets to make. Until a child is born, in most jurisdictions, a father has no standing to bring any application regarding the naming of the child because the issue isn't ripe yet. And under your skin is under your sovereignty. So women have a longer period of time where they have actual legal rights with an infant. Because again, under your skin is under your sovereignty. As soon as that baby is born, you can file an application and you can try to. But again, the mother basically fills out the birth certificate because there is no question of who of maternity. Mm-hmm. Like, if the baby comes out of you, that's your kid. Like, there's no way it got implanted accidentally. That's your kid. So paternity, DNA tests exclude the possibility, right? But it's really not. You know, it's not as clear cut that this is your child. So women do have an advantage when it comes to the ability to pick the surname or even first name of a child. This has been an issue I've ended up having to litigate quite a few times.
I would imagine. Yeah, I can certainly imagine. Yeah. So, all right, we'll wrap it up on that. I
don't know what the name is. And I think that it might be a little short-sighted to think that, okay, if I change the name, like, first of all, no one knows this guy's last name.
Well, like, it's getting out there now. No one, like, generally, but of course,
the general, it's not like it's Hitler. You know, if your last name was Hitler, you'd be like, I want to change that name. Like, that's got a bad, you know, bad association. But I don't think, you know, I think maybe like Diddy's kids might be like, ooh, can we get rid of Combs? But I don't really know that this is something that this is probably going to bring more attention to the last name. Because everyone just refers to him as we have as, you know, Chud the Builder. That's so that's what it is. So unless the kid was named, you know, Bob the Builder or something like that, that'd be hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, I just, you know, I just, for anybody who does support him, I would look at how, like, Nick Fuentes and the Tate brothers are not supporting this guy. Yeah. And maybe take that as a sign that this is not the guy to throw your money and effort behind.
There are probably causes out there that would be more worthy of your money. Like, I'm not telling people where they should focus their charitable giving. But something tells me there are probably people in the world who deserve your benevolence and compassion more than Chud the Builder. I'm not saying this man doesn't deserve some compassion or empathy or forgiveness or anything like that. I think people are capable of redemption. I think good people do dumb things. I don't know anything about this person. I'm not a fan of his, of your, but I do think that there are probably more worthy places for a few $100,000 to get raised in a few days. It's pretty shocking to me that this is where so many of the populace decided, hey, that's the cause I'm going to give to. That's going to do it for today's Better Call Sex. Remember to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Really does help the channel. And if you want to help the channel, please check out all of our sponsors. It's the absolute best way to support the show. Remember to check us out on Instagram at NYC Divorce Lawyer. And remember to check us out at sextonshow.com to send us your feedback, your suggestions for future episodes. We really do appreciate each and every one of you. But for now, we're adjourned.